You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe New Mexican and RadioCafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation moves public education in bold new directions through grants, programs, and advocacy. Funding learning initiatives and community programs, visit lanlfoundation.org for more information. And many thanks to the Lanham Foundation for support of the Radio Cafe. I'm very happy now to welcome Ralph Vigil. He is founding president at Molino de la Isla Organics, and he's chairman of the New Mexico Acequia Commission. And Garrett Venneklaassen, who is with New Mexico Wild. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And we're here to talk about a proposed mining operation in the Santa Fe National Forest in the Pecos area. Tell us what's going on. There's a company that wants to mine. What do they want to do? What's happening?
Yeah, there's a proposed mine exploratory operation by a company called Comexico, which has a subsidiary, New World Cobalt, out of Australia. And they proposed to do some exploratory pads, which are about 30 holes, which range from 500 feet to 4,000, which they're allowed within those parameters.
4,000 feet straight down?
Down.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're wanting to come out basically and see what's there, see what they can find. Basically, if they do find stuff, they'll probably flip it and sell it to a mining operation. So our concern is that, number one, even the exploratory phase, it's a real threat to our water, and just the seismic testing and all the disturbance that goes on with this is not for that area. So we believe that we need to take action and get the word out and form the coalition, which we did with a bunch of traditional land use groups, which are Acequias and people who have lived off the land within the community for hundreds of years, and other groups such as New Mexico Wild and Amigos Bravos and different interest groups that want to protect our watersheds and water, along with the Upper Pecos Watershed Association, which is trying to be the lead organization in this as the local group to really protect that watershed with the support of the other groups. So it's a real scary thought that, you know, this could come to our backyard. We never thought of this. It was just something that wasn't on our radar. But with the relaxing up on regulations that's happening up in Washington with the current administration, I think that this has made it prime for this to start happening, not just here, in other areas. So we're new. We're learning what's going on with this. This is going to be our first fight, as far as I'm concerned, and a lot of the Acequias are concerned in our communities, as far as protecting that quality of water and ensuring that our watersheds are safe for all of us, and not just us, but the ecosystems and the wildlife and the habitat that provides us with a place to live.
Garrett, how is it even legal to mine in a national forest? I thought the forest designation meant it was set aside for other uses, like non-industrial uses.
No, it's a great question, and I think it all goes back to the 1872 Mining Act, which is a very archaic but very powerful piece of legislation. And these are 1872 old mining patents. And really, those patents afford these conglomerates like Comexico to come in and run roughshod over landscapes and watersheds. It is a very, very, very powerful tool that they can use. And again, I think this goes back to the fact that we need to reform the 1872 Mining Act. And there's a website called thediggings.com. There's over 200,000 active mining patents in our mountains and watersheds in New Mexico
alone.
Just
in New Mexico.
Yeah, there's 11,000 active mining claims right now. It's a really huge problem. And to make this even worse, the Trump administration issued an Executive Minerals Act.
Executive order.
An executive order, yeah. And what he's doing is trying to fast track the development of anything that has to do with any minerals that have to do with technology and defense-related minerals for military products.
What kind of minerals are they thinking are up there?
I think they're looking for, You know, when you look at Comexico's webpage, they're looking for any precious and base minerals. So gold, silver, copper, zinc, any of the base minerals. And it is such a mineral rich. The place is Jones Hill, which is about 5 miles due north of Brush Ranch Camp, up Indian Creek. And there's actually Indian Creek, Sawyer Creek, Macho Creek, and Dalton Creek would all be impacted by this. I mean, putting a mine in the mountains is a dumb idea. But Jones Hill is the top of 4 different watersheds that all run into the Pecos, major tributaries.
What kinds of mining operations have been in this same area in the past?
Back in the 20s, 30s, there was a mining operation going on there. They left. It's a Superfund site. There was some cleanup reclamation done. Then in 1991, that many years later, we felt the effects in Pecos of that. We had a large runoff, storm runoff. After that, Superfund site was starting to get cleaned up and that reclamation work. It disturbed, that disturbed soil got washed and all the different contaminants went into the river. Ended up contaminating the Lisboa Springs Hatchery in Pecos, killing off, what was it, 20-some thousand, 19,000? Yeah. I don't remember the amount, large amount of
tens
fish.
Tens of thousands of fish.
But yeah. It crippled the community at that time because, you know, in the summer, the community really depended on a lot of that tourism, that type of outdoors, recreational type money coming in. And, you know, the hatchery never really bounced back. I remember going as a kid, it was a thing to do for trips. Schools would come from everywhere, and it's just not the same anymore. So, you know, what do you have, 60, 70 years later? Here we go, we had the effects. So everybody, you know, we're all into instant gratification for something, but we need to start looking at the future and the long-term impacts that this is going to have in our community and not just the upfront dollars. And so we look at the impacts that it has so many years later, and we wonder, you know, such a much larger mining operation going on now and what will really be disturbed in the taking of water and water rights. Some senior water rights that we have in the area could be at risk. So it could be an entire dismantling of the community. And what I see with operations like this is they come in for the money and they don't only leave the waste behind, but they leave separation. They come in to create divide in the community and a lot of divisiveness. But hopefully with this campaign, we can get out in front of that and educate people and make them aware of what's going on, and so they don't get the false impressions that we're trying to steer away jobs, we're trying to steer away economic benefits. We want to show them what it's really about and show them that it's more expensive in the long run what we're going to be doing as far as allowing anything like this to come into our neighborhoods, because water is, to me, clean water is a basic human right that we should all have, and we shouldn't have to fight over it. It should just be something that is common sense. But when it comes to money, that kind of gets steered away to other types of interests. So we need to really be strong in our campaign in informing people the importance of clean water and get back to respecting water.
One of the things that I think is really important to talk about is the history of these communities. I mean, you have Native people and Hispanic people who go back centuries in this area and who have a very close relationship to the land. And that's still there. I mean, when you talk about acequia communities, you're talking about a kind of moving away from or like non-industrial approach to the land, which is a very healthy and sort of mutual approach to land, water, and our relationship to it. Describe in your work as a person who is from New Mexico working with acequias, what does that feel like for you, and what is that like? What has that been like historically in this area?
Well, historically, it's been really sacred, you know, tied to the land and water, and a relationship that has always been passed on from generation to generation. Is, you know, first and foremost, we're stewards of that land, and we need to take care of it. And it's not ours. You know, we may own it in title through warranty deed, through legal processes and paperwork. But in reality, when we go back to who we really are as just another species on this planet trying to survive, we're one. We're in connection. We're not separate, all living things. And I think we've gotten away from that. We treat things as if they're dead, as if it has no relevance. And within our traditional communities and being brought up in one, that was never expressed. It was always expressed to take care of it, that water was really important to use, growing the food. Also, not just growing food, but the Secas provide also extensions of the river habitats, wildlife corridors. When we flood irrigate, a lot of people don't understand, and we get people from moving in from other locales that may think our flood irrigation is a waste of water. It's not. We're recharging aquifers. It's seeping through. It's providing what the rains haven't provided in a long time. And so we start severing that from our communities and it starts disappearing, then those ecosystems, those extensions of the green belts will start to disappear. Our landscape won't be as beautiful, and everything that our ancestors and the natives before us fought hard to keep intact so that it can be passed on and left in better hands and also left better than we received it. But that's gotten away. We've gotten too much into materialism. We see, you know, people caring more about what they can buy instead of what the earth can give us and what we can give in return. And what we see more and more is taking and taking without giving in return. And this earth, this world doesn't, this universe doesn't balance. It doesn't work that way. You always have to give back. You always have to give back. You can't just be taking and taking. So that's why it was always important to work the land and to make sure that you had a healthy community. And the Esekias were all about community. You always have, you know, you go back to the old days when it was the first, other than the tribes and their organized ways, it was the first organized democracy in the United States before any legislative branches. These were elected officials within their own communities entrusted with running the water. And water was the most important thing and still is the most important resource we have today, but we don't treat it as such. We treat it as it's unlimited and it's there. So my goal with the farm is basically, it's not money. I tell you that much. It all goes back into the operation. But, you know, going around in my work with the Esekia Commission and seeing that, you know, through adjudication process and the litigation of water, where it's not good enough, cultural tradition, respect, stewardship isn't good enough to maintain your water right. You have to have a dollar figure put to it. You have to have some sort of contribution with money. So in these wanting to take land from communities that's established through paper, which is another crazy idea, can't move water on paper. Water stays, it's where the earth intends it to be. So municipalities grow growing pains in New Mexico. There's no water, so where do you think they want to come? So people want to sell. Big water right struggle in Pecos right now with the water transfer. So how do we get back to respecting that? And I think that this came at a very, very important time to start waking people up to realize how important water is and getting it back. Pecos is, you know, maintained a good tradition agricultural base, but it's dying. It's dying more and more so because Santa Fe provides what we need. There's a grocery store, there's Walmart, there's everything. But if we could start changing the way people eat and their attitudes of contributing more to locally grown foods and supporting local farmers that want to grow, then maybe we can start changing that and start changing the way people think about water through food and those behaviors and going back to those old traditions and educating people. And I think that the heads that we've butted in the past of over maintenance of the forest and maintenance of our waterways is just because we don't sit down and talk. We're not informed. We don't see each other as humans. We see each other as opponents because you're on this clique and I'm on this clique. But now we got to come together as humans and understand the importance and finally have that dialogue that's been long needed so that we can start understanding each other. I don't think that it's one person wants to be extreme in one way and one the extreme in the other. It's just that you don't know where I'm coming from and I don't know where you're coming from.
When you say that, you know, this phenomenon happens, companies come in and divisiveness is sown in the community, what are some of those divisions? Is it like jobs versus nature or water? What does it look like?
It's that. It's jobs. It's economics. A lot of these towns don't have it. They don't have jobs. There's some people that don't want to get out of the community. Or don't have the resources to come to work in Santa Fe, don't have the education, don't have. So they're looking for those types of jobs. There might be some people that might be skilled or specialized in that or want to get into that. But I don't think that it's going to be what people think it's going to be. It's not like a Walmart coming in and it's going to provide tons of cashier jobs and loading jobs 24 hours a day. You know, it's not that type of work. it's more skill set nowadays. You know, it takes the technology involved and the way they explore is leaps more advanced technology. So it takes people with credentials, people who have been educated to do this.
So they have to bring them in from the outside anyway?
Yep.
And the Cuesta story is a perfect story, right?
Tell us that story.
You know, the Molly Core mine went in and they literally destroyed an entire mountain range. If you fly over it, it's heartbreaking to see an open pit mine that is many, many miles wide with red poison lakes at the bottom of them. All the springs are now acidified throughout the Red River. Again, it's another Superfund site that taxpayers are paying billions of dollars across the West and across New Mexico. Taxpayers are paying billions of dollars because these mines close down. The jobs go away, and what is left is a broken poison watershed. There are no jobs. It's a finite resource, right? So it's just a flash in the pan. It creates an artificial economy for a community. And the water that is used, you know, they're going to have to buy up tons of water rights throughout the Pecos Valley, which is going to compromise a lot of landowners and a lot of traditional agriculture users like Ralph. They come in, buy up all the water rights. They create an artificial, it's not sustainable, right? And that's the beauty of what Ralph and the community is all about. It's about this sustainable land use community that has been doing this for hundreds, if not thousands of years, and can be doing it far into the future. And that's the future of a community like Pecos, is sustainability, right? And culture.
It just occurred to me, I've never thought about the question of, if a mining company comes in and buys water rights, then they use them and whatever mess they leave or don't leave or whatever. What happens to the water rights when they leave?
Well, Chevron, great example. Chevron has an incredible portfolio of water rights from the Molly Core mine that they bought. A lot of these big mining companies, big copper mine companies also in the South, and it's obviously very, very valuable, and water rights are more and more incredibly valuable, like Ralph had talked about.
So they hold on to
them? They hold on to them.
As a speculative thing?
Yeah, yeah. And
that they can then sell?
Right.
But it doesn't go back to the community?
No, not at all. And really, the people that are buying these, water rights are so expensive, and it is a commodity in the West. It's a very, very valuable commodity. Obviously, water is a finite resource, and it is a commodity. International brokers are coming in buying water rights in New Mexico because they are so valuable. And it's forcing traditional water right users and traditional agricultural users out of business.
I was just listening to a broadcast several days ago about the sixth biggest city in India is drying up. They only have water, like people who live there a few hours a day, they're shipping it in. So it's not like you can't lose it. You know, people think that because it's always been flowing, it's always going to be flowing. Let's talk about the wildlife in this area. Garrett Vanaclausen, you're with New Mexico Wild. What kind of wildlife do you see? I know you're a big outdoorsman, so you're there all the time. What's this place like? What kind of wildlife does it have? What are the threats to that wildlife from mining?
Yeah, so again, there's four massive watersheds, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of acres of really the most beautiful, pristine, subalpine habitat you've ever seen. I went up Indian Creek to see if there were Rio Grande cutthroat trout, which are our native trout, who have been in these systems since the Pleistocene. And I found a really vibrant population of cutthroat trout up in Indian Creek.
Are you a fisherman?
I am a very passionate fly fisherman. In fact, I grew up fly fishing on the Pecos, like so many people fishing on the Pecos. My dad was a World War II vet, and the Pecos River really was his therapist. We used to go up there fishing as a kid. So we've got these Macho, Indian Creek, and Dalton Creek all have these native Rio Grande cutthroat trout, which are teetering on the threatened and endangered list. And when you take out these genetic populations of cutthroat trout, it makes this species even more susceptible to being put back on the threatened and endangered species list. But I was up the other day, I saw a black bear, I saw a herd of elk, I saw a mule deer, I saw a flock of turkeys, I saw grouse in one outing, and fresh cougar scat on the trail. These are really, really vibrant, incredible ecosystems. And the other thing, too, is, you know, the people in Pecos have been feeding their families with deer and elk and turkeys and grouse and trout again, for centuries and centuries. And this is the grocery store for the community, right? And these are sustainable populations of wildlife that it's the protein source, right, for the community. And when you start impacting these habitats and fragmenting wildlife corridors like Ralph talked about, you destroy opportunity because the game goes somewhere else. And all that heavy machinery going in there and all the drilling and seismic activity, it's going to run all the deer and elk and turkeys and bear out of that country. And again,
not to mention birds.
Right. Incredible bird life up there. And I know the spotted owl is a kind of a sticky subject, but there is a nesting pair of spotted owls on Jones Hill, and it is a protected area. And there's an endangered plant species up there. It's a fragile ecosystem, but it's just incredible country and amazing fishing. And again, the folks from Pecos have been hunting and fishing up there forever.
Your family as well, Ralph?
Yeah, for a long time, the Vigiles come from a gentleman by the name of Don Asiano Vigil. He was the first Hispanic territorial governor of New Mexico, and he helped ease the transition over to the United States. So it's been quite a legacy for the Vigiles there on the east side, which he obtained that land grant on the east side of Pecos, which, you know, was mostly owned by Vigiles, and, you know, people that married into the Vigiles. So it's really important to a lot of us there that we maintain that. People love their mountains. I mean, everybody loves to go for a cruise in the evenings, you know, and I'm sure any of the locals, whether it be hunting or just the scenery or just the attachment and the connection to the land, won't want to see any of that ripped up and torn up. I mean, it's different than it was in the 20s. You know, it's a different mindset, and it's not the same. So I think we'll see a lot of pushback. I haven't heard too much about people wanting to support this, but our wildlife is everything to us. Everybody loves hunting. Everybody loves fishing. You know, you go around town, everybody's with their camel, with their real tree. It's part of the culture. It's who we are. I remember when we used to go in high school, you can't do it anymore. It's kind of crazy to even think about it, but kids would show up to school with the gun racks and the hunting rifle in the truck. It was hunting season. It wasn't a problem. Everybody, you know, knew what firearms were. People respected that, and it's for hunting. It's for, you know, what we do to sustain us, and, you know, people love the meat, and it's a lot better than some of the options we have nowadays in the grocery stores. So it's a real love, connection, attachment. It's who we are. It's part of that sangre, that blood, that querencia, what we were brought up in. So it's important that we maintain that and start looking to these areas if we want to bring in jobs. And let's start supporting more ecotourism, more outfitting, more community type of businesses within the community that support that, support entrepreneurship within the community as well. You know, people love going and getting sheds. You know, start thinking of economic opportunities that can happen within the community so that there's something better option of living off the land that is clean and healthy.
Some mining companies claim that they are ecologically aware and they say they'll clean up. Has either one of you ever seen any examples of that? They're shaking their heads.
Never. I mean, it's a joke. It's an absolute joke. I mean, there's, again, I think the number is $21 billion worth of legacy mines, $21 billion of cleanup that needs to be done. And this is a perfect example. New World Cobalt, Comexico is a subsidiary of New World Cobalt. And this is what mining companies do. They create an LLC. What they do is the LLC will go bankrupt. When it's all over, they shut it down, they close shop. The mine up in Cement Creek is such a perfect example where, you know, the Cement Creek is poisoned by that mine in the Animas, right? And it wasn't the EPA that caused that. It was the mining company. It's a draining mine. And what happens is that water builds up in the mountain, that toxic water, and the EPA was trying to figure out a way to drain that water. In the 70s, the exact same thing happened where the mine burst and put all that toxic water into Cement Creek, which goes into the Animas, which ended up in the San Juan. That same thing happened in the 70s. The EPA was there trying to prevent that, but it's, for lack of a better term, it's like a pimple, right? And all that nasty stuff builds up in the mountain. And, I mean, it's a really tricky thing. And the EPA is the agency that is assigned to clean these things up. And this is a perfect example. And the Torero mine also, you know, goes bankrupt, goes away, destroys an ecosystem and a watershed and an aquifer.
And they take no responsibility because, yeah. So there's a large company. The company has subsidiaries. The subsidiaries do the work. They take the minerals. They take the money. They don't clean up. They go bankrupt. So then nobody's liable to clean it up. And then who pays the bill for cleaning it up?
The American taxpayer. You know, and even the Questa mine, Chevron still owns it. And Chevron is doing some things to help pay for remediation. But it's a Superfund site. So the American taxpayers, Chevron is paying some of that money. But it's the American taxpayer that is bearing the major brunt of the cost of remediation. And when we think about remediation, it is a wound in the system, in the aquifer, in the watershed. It's a Band-Aid. Questa, you can only do remediation to keep things from getting worse, but there's always the constant threat of, for example, the tailings pond in Questa to acidify and destroy the entire aquifer from Questa all the way down to the Rio Grande at La Junta, and then 20 miles of Rio Grande. And oftentimes it's just a matter of when, not if. This just goes on. And look at what happened in 91 with the Torero mine. That was a Superfund site. They did millions of dollars worth of remediation work. And then there was a catastrophic flood and it killed the whole river. This is the story, right? I love the saying, you know, the insanity is doing things over and over and expecting different results. We've been there. We've seen this. I don't care how careful the mining company says they're going to be. We always see catastrophic results, and it's just not worth it. It's not worth the short-term exploitation of these resources that belong to all people. It's about creating, instead of consumptive land use models, sustainable land use models, like Ralph talked about.
I don't know how many times on this show we have talked about privatized profits and socialized losses, but this seems to be another example of that kind of thing. The company keeps the profits, the taxpayers pay the bill for what would otherwise be that company's losses. And I think a lot of these companies wouldn't be making money if they had to pay for their own messes.
I like to see it as we mimic nature, right? So you try to look at things in nature that are reoccurring, such as webbing, waves, branching, just looking out here, concentric circles. So that occurs in us. We have that. We have branching. We have rivers flowing through us. So I look at it as, okay, I'm supposed to be sustainable, eating organic, putting the good things in my body so that my body can function organically the way it was intended to. But then corporations are mining my body, basically, because I go buy junk at the grocery store, GMOs, whatever they put in it, all the chemicals, goes through my system, my tunnels. It's mining my body inside. It's jacking up my stomach. So now all of a sudden, you know, people have stomach issues. It's not curable. IBS or whatever you get is not curable. You're going to be on medication the rest of your life. So it's the same thing. They're tearing up the inside of the earth. Can't fix it. It can never be fixed. Those rocks are acidic, a lot of them. It needs perpetual care. You know, part of the Mining Act in New Mexico has, you know, protects against that. So that just continues to leach and leach and leach and leach. And it doesn't stop because you just went and opened a wound now that wasn't supposed to be exposed in that way. And that disturbance is now something that needs that perpetual care, just like we do when we mess up our bodies bad enough. We need that medication. Then they go mine us again with the prescription pills and all that. And I know it's not part of our conversation here, but it's the same thing because we are organic beings. We are part of this planet. We do mimic the earth in the same way the earth functions, we function. So if we look at ourselves, you see the damage we do to ourselves that is irreversible. It's the same thing.
And if you go on the MNRD, the Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resources website, there's a link to toxicity in fish species. And the Pecos River already has some of the most toxic levels of PCBs, DDT, and heavy metals, including lead and mercury, of any watershed in the West. And they're recommending downstream in some of those, there's a chain of lakes down there. The fish are so toxic that you can only eat one a month, walleye, pike, and striped bass, because there's all these toxic chemicals in the water. And the trout in the Pecos River, you know, those heavy metals, the lead and the and mercury and things like that, get into the soil. The invertebrates that the trout eat concentrate those poisons, and then the trout become swimming thermometers, essentially.
Swimming thermometers?
Yeah, because of the mercury.
Oh, I see.
You know, they're toxic, you know, and so folks have been eating trout in Pecos for countless generations, right? And it's part of the lifestyle. And so it's just so sad to see these systems poisoned and the wildlife poisoned to the point where you can't consume them. And these are sustainable protein sources for the community that should remain clean and dependable.
So you mentioned the 1872 Mining Act, which gives a lot of latitude and rights to mining companies. Do you expect a legal battle, and are there legal grounds to fight this potential mining operation?
I think that's one of the things that the coalition is talking about. I mean, there's lots of tools in our toolbox to stop this mine, short-term and long-term, but I think that litigation is going to be something that we're all talking about very seriously. And there are nonprofits that specialize in, you know, Amigos Bravos is a perfect example. And New Mexico Wild has two attorneys, so...
And Wild Earth Guardians.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think we're going to need to talk. The coalition is going to need to talk about this. I think short-term, there's a lot of things that individuals who are listening to this can do. You can log on to the Upper Pecos Watershed Association website or NM Wild website. There's a petition being circulated, thousands of people on that petition. I think that the governor, people need to reach out to the governor and encourage her to publicly start to oppose the mine. Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resources and the Environment Department, obviously EMNERD issues permits for this, and I think we need to slow this process down. And the Environment Department, one of the things, there's a 5-mile roadbed that runs from the Pecos River up to the mine site, and it's just an engineering disaster. Every time it rains, there's tons and tons of sediment that are going into Indian Creek. And that's impacting turbidity and water quality in Indian Creek, which then in turn impacts water quality in the Pecos. And the Environment Department then can play a role in slowing this whole thing down. And obviously you need to reach out to Congressman Ben Ray Lujan, Senator Heinrich, and Senator Udall, who can also, and I suspect will very soon also, oppose the mine publicly. And then there's a forest planning process. The Santa Fe National Forest has a planning process. People should log on to the Santa Fe Forest website, and these links are at NM Wild and UPWA, both the websites, and publicly comment about not wanting the mine to go in. And then Steve Romero is the lead person in the National Forest, Santa Fe National Forest, in the Pecos Ranger Station. We'll supply Steve Romero's email address, and people should flood the Forest Service with emails and calls demanding that this thing stop. So there's a lot that the public can do right now. And again, it's about a public outcry. And one of the coolest things is, you know, Ralph and I are looking around the room in the coalition. I've never seen a coalition like this in my lifetime. I mean, sometimes we're fighting about like land designations and, you know, wilderness or no wilderness or whatever. But I mean, we're all at the same table and we're all on the same page. And it's a remarkable. I mean, Pecos Pueblo and Tezuca Pueblo and the land grants and the acequias and the private landowners and the environmentalists and the sportsmen and women and the grazing permittees, and we're all at the table. I love the idea of the of how the communities come together.
These broad coalitions. I do some work with the Kivira Coalition. Mm-hmm. They're always talking about the radical center, which is when people come together across all kinds of ideologies and find what they have in common, which turns out to be they have about 80% of things in common, and that's what you work on.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting to see, and I love the idea. Ralph says, you know, we all need to like listen to each other and talk to each other, and the greater goal is about our children's children being able to experience this place and live a lifestyle, like Ralph said, that is sustainable. And that's the essence of what New Mexico really is, you know.
The Upper Pecos Watershed Association is on the web at pecoswatershed.org. New Mexico Wild is at nmwild.org. Ralph Fihil, anything else you want to let people know about before we go?
Yeah, there's the Upper Pecos Watershed's having a community meeting out in Pecos. And they also, on their website, have who to call. They have a resolution from San Miguel County that San Miguel County put out. Although this sits on Santa Fe County side, you know, that affects San Miguel because the water is running into that county. So Santa Fe County commissioners as well, any elected official that you have access to. Also, these campaigns that we're putting out on Facebook through New Mexico Wild, and soon the coalition will have something going, a Facebook, a website. Share it to all your friends. Get it out there. Instagram, just bomb the heck out of it. And we need it out there. We need people to know what's going on. We need to educate people that it's something of importance. And hopefully, you know, they'll realize they stirred up a hornet's nest and maybe regret coming to New Mexico, but we'll see.
And I think this is the tip of the iceberg, right? If you go into that diggings.com website, there's over 200,000 mining claims in New Mexico. The Sangres are full of 1872 patents. And there's blood in the water, right? And if this mine is allowed to go through, we're going to see this go again and again and again in the Gallinas and up in the Santa Barbara and up into Hondo. And we're going to see this happen throughout the Sangres. And that is the foundation. Water is everything for New Mexico.
Yeah. And it's already a problem. It's not like it's just
right.
Right,
and all the climate models, all the data says that we're headed for a mega drought. And we should be restoring these watersheds, and we should be doing everything we can to like Ralph said, to slow that water down and keep it in the system and have a vibrant, healthy, dependable source for clean water and clean agriculture. If we don't do that, New Mexico's done. I mean, we're done. And so every New Mexican needs to really stand up and really get involved with this thing.
Garrett Vanaclausen is with New Mexico Wild. Ralph Fihil is chairman of the New Mexico Acequia Commission, and he's also founding president of Molina de la Isla Organics, and that is, you grow, you're a farmer. Also, you grow vegetables?
Yeah, I grow. I'm certified organic farm. My whole main mission is to prove that Acequias can be a place to bring community together, grow food, provide better, healthy food for our community, and get our kids back into eating healthier. I think a lot of our issues that we face today is because we're not eating healthy. I see a lot more depression and it's a lot more social anxiety type issues people have. And I have a feeling it has to do with a lot of technology, but it has to do with we're not balanced. We're not eating right. So hopefully that'll help our community and prove a model that, you know, we can be sustainable. Farms can make it, and we can take care of our water.
Ralph and Garrett, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation moves public education in bold new directions through grants, programs, and advocacy. Supporting social and emotional needs of students and teachers, visit lanlfoundation.org for more information. And many thanks to the Lanl Foundation for supporting the Radio Cafe. You've been listening to the Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send us any feedback on the show, ideas, or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.